Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 28th, 2025. We begin with the front page article, Madigan Team Hits Bribery Claims. Defense Continues Closing Arguments by Jason Meisner, Megan Crapeau, and Ray Long. An attorney for Michael Madigan on Monday repeatedly denied that the ex-House Speaker ever thought utility giant ComEd was bribing him, and painted co-defendant Michael McLean as an exaggerator who would frequently use Madigan's name to inflate his own significance. They've got to prove he conspired to agree with ComEd that they're offering a bribe, attorney Dan Collins told jurors in closing arguments at Madigan's marathon racketeering trial. If a public official thinks folks act on their job recommendations to promote goodwill, not guilty. When you look at the full timeline, look at the full facts, that's the right result. Collins, who began his closing arguments Friday, spent Monday morning picking apart accusations involving bribes from ComEd, the longest-running and most detailed scheme alleged in the indictment against Madigan. Prosecutors say that in exchange for Madigan's support of ComEd's legislative agenda, the utility put Madigan's favored candidate on their board, reserved coveted intern slots for applicants from Madigan's ward, and hired Madigan's allies for lucrative contracts, sometimes for little or no work. But on Monday, Collins told jurors that in order for them to find that there was a bribe, prosecutors have to prove an explicit agreement to exchange official action for the benefit before the official action was taken. The timeline, he said, did not bear that out. Madigan, 82, a Southside Democrat, and his co-defendant, Michael McLean, a longtime lobbyist from downstate Quincy, are charged in a 23-count indictment alleging that Madigan's vaunted state and political operations were run like a criminal enterprise to increase his power and enrich himself and his associates. In addition to alleging bribery schemes involving ComEd and AT&T Illinois, the indictment accuses Madigan of pressuring developers into hiring his, Madigan's, law firm. Collins was expected to continue his closing argument after a lunch break on Monday. An attorney for McLean was set to go next, followed by a government rebuttal and then finally jury deliberations, which may not begin until Wednesday. Collins, on Monday, stressed the importance of paying attention to the timeline, saying ComEd was able to pass some of its favored legislation in the years before any alleged bribe, and Madigan supported the concept of a smart grid bill beginning in late 2010, before the time frame in which prosecutors are alleging he got a, quote, stream of benefits. And Madigan did not simply give ComEd whatever it wanted, Collins noted. He played hardball in negotiations. Quote, the speaker took this seriously, Collins said. If the allegation is that he was bribed, he was in ComEd's pocket, why the intense pushback on ComEd? Why the intense negotiations? Why install protections to make sure they carry through on their word? That's not consistent with a bribe. ComEd also took significant losses in the negotiation process for the 2016 Future Energy Jobs Act bill, Collins pointed out. The microgrids and demand-based rates that they badly wanted did not end up in the final legislation, he pointed out. If Mike Madigan is being bribed in 2016, how the hell does that happen, Collins asked. Because he wasn't. And Madigan was completely in the dark when it came to the alleged no-work subcontractors ComEd is accused of hiring in an attempt to bribe him. Madigan made the recommendations, but he didn't have a clue that what happened after that, Collins said. He believes these are people who will do things to be helpful, Collins said. You heard a lot of evidence about the fact these guys didn't do much. It was aggravating to Madigan. He did not know. As for Madigan's support of one-time political foe Juan Ochoa for a spot on the ComEd board, Madigan recommended him to ComEd at the request of then-Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who sometime before had done Madigan a favor in recommending someone from Madigan's high school alma mater to the Naval Academy. There was no specific corrupt exchange involved in the appointment, Collins said. Under Illinois law, lobbying includes promotion of goodwill. Mike understands ComEd is adding Juan Ochoa as an expression of goodwill, he said. He does not understand that to be a bribe. As for the blitz of emails and calls from McLean using Madigan's name to pester ComEd into taking certain actions, that was simply McLean exaggerating his own significance, Collins said, who more than once referred to McLean sarcastically as, quote, Mr. Important. Quote, we all know people like this in our lives, Collins said. Somebody who hears one thing and then spins up, I'm going to take care of this. I got it. This is huge. That's Mike McLean, Collins said. Then, referred to a memorable note McLean wrote to Madigan, saying he was standing guard at the bridge with my musket. Standing with a musket. Who talks that way? Collins asked the jurors. The trial, which began October 8th and is finally inching toward a conclusion, represents the apex of a lengthy federal corruption investigation that has already resulted in convictions of several other Madigan-adjacent figures over the past few years. Madigan, however, is inarguably the biggest target. Prosecutors ended the first phase of their closing argument Friday, painting a far different picture of Madigan. Assistant U.S. Attorney Diane MacArthur called him, quote, the man calling the shots, a supremely powerful politician who for years used his role as an elected official, leader of the state Democratic Party, and private lawyer to advance a criminal enterprise focused on private gain. In more local news, we have Pontiac to Welcome Underground Railroad Exhibit by Drew Zimmerman. A special exhibit honoring the men and women responsible for operating Illinois' portion of the Underground Railroad will be on display in Pontiac through the month of February. The exhibit, Journey to Freedom, Illinois Underground Railroad, will be set up at the Pontiac Public Library at 211 East Madison Street, starting Friday and lasting through March 5th. It is free and open to the public. It was first unveiled in Springfield last fall and has been curated by the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area, which also is known as Looking for Lincoln. The intent was to highlight some of the unsung heroes of the Underground Railroad, the famous network of secret routes and safe houses used to help thousands of enslaved African Americans escape to freedom. We are so honored to share this new exhibit with the Pontiac area community, said Sarah Watson, executive director of Looking for Lincoln. Many of these Illinois Underground Railroad stories have not been shared in one place. It is so inspiring to learn more about the bravery of all these people who took so many risks to fight against slavery for the basic rights for themselves and others, she added. Pontiac Public Library will host an opening presentation and reception at 5:30 p.m. on Thursday, January 30th. Special presentations and performances have also been scheduled throughout the month of February, which Kristen Holzhauer, director of the Pontiac Public Library, said will help add to the experience. You're listening to real people in our area who lived at this time through reenactments and through multimedia sources throughout the exhibit. So it's really a compelling and impactful way to learn this history, Holzhauer said. On February 4th, Laura Keyes, a lifetime member of the Association of Lincoln Presenters, will portray Peoria resident Lucy Pettengill, a station operator of the Underground Railroad from 1857. Keyes will chronicle abolitionist movements in western Illinois. This program will start at 5:30 p.m. On February 11th, Dale Maley, president of the Livingston County Historical Society, will present his research on the progression of the Underground Railroad through Livingston County and share stories spanning from Fairbury to Ottawa. This event will also be at 5:30 p.m. At 1 p.m. on February 22nd, folk musician Chris Vellillo will hold a meet and greet at the library ahead of his 3 p.m. performance at the Eagle Theater at 319 North Plum Street. Vellillo combines a variety of musical styles and narratives into a unique portrait, highlighting the history of the Midwest. While traditional accounts of the Underground Railroad generally dismiss Illinois, our state had more miles bordering slave states than any other, Vellillo said in a news release, and those borders were rivers which made for excellent escape routes. For more information, visit PontiacPublicLibrary.org or call the library at 815-844-7229. Brendan Dennison writes, Festival to present free classical concerts and lectures. A free festival honoring an esteemed American composer is coming to Illinois State University next month. The Charles Ives Sesquicentennial Festival is presenting free public lectures and concerts February 19th through the 21st on the Normal campus, plus additional master classes and a trip for Redbird students to see a Chicago orchestra. Iatt Shu will be the host of this festival, which has been presented across the country over the past year. Other hosts have included the Brevard Music Center's July 2024 Festival in Brevard, North Carolina, the Indiana University Music School in September and October 2024, and New York's Bard College in November 2024. Ives, who lived from 1874 to 1954, scored variations America, My Country 'Tis of Thee, and other classical works. Programming kicks off at 7 p.m. on February 19th with a public screening of a documentary entitled Charles Ives's America at the Normal Theater at 209 North Street in Normal. ISU students will also have the opportunity to take voice and piano master classes and register for a February 22nd concert of Ives's work by the Chicago Sinfonietta at Mandel Hall at the University of Chicago. Participating ISU students will get free transportation and tickets to the show. For the full schedule and more information, visit the festival's website at about.illinoisstate.edu/Ives Festival. And we have Bloomington's 2024 water main breaks exceed national average. The number of water main breaks Bloomington had in 2024 exceeded the national average set by the American Water Works Association, according to Water Department Director Ed Andrews. The AWWA's national average is one break for every 4 miles of main in an average system. For the city of Bloomington, which has about 450 miles of water main, this would amount to 112.5 breaks. But in 2024, Bloomington totaled 115 breaks. Andrews said this was the first time in a long time the city exceeded the national average. He noted almost half of those occurred in January, February, and December of 2024. Last week, Bloomington experienced multiple main breaks, one of which was at a main on Clinton Street that was first installed in the 1880s. Returning to the first page, we have lawmakers split on Trump. Partisan divide seen on first week, tariffs, pardons, taxes, by Brendan Moore. Reflecting the nation's deeply divided political climate, two central Illinois members of Congress offered wildly divergent perspectives on the early days of President Donald Trump's second term. Peoria Republican Representative Darren LaHood, who represents Illinois' 16th Congressional District, described the, quote, great rollout, unquote, of Trump's first week as a reason to be very optimistic of what lays ahead. Springfield Democrat U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, who represents Illinois' 13th Congressional District, sees, quote, troubling signals in Trump's early actions, which included a slew of executive orders on everything from immigration policy to withdrawing the United States from the World Health Organization and Paris Climate Accords. But in separate interviews with Lee Enterprises on Friday, the two were closer in their rhetoric on a few topics than their partisan political affiliations might suggest. Each expressed concern, but not outright disapproval, of Trump's potential use of tariffs. Both also expressed disagreement with the president's decision to pardon more than 1,500 people who were convicted of crimes related to the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Representatives Mary Miller, a Republican from Hinesboro, and Eric Sorensen, a Democrat from Olean, did not respond to requests for interviews for this story. Representative Mike Boast, a Republican from Murfreesboro, was not immediately available. While Trump's executive actions captured significant headlines last week as he seeks to reshape the federal government, one of the most consequential decisions he can make remains undecided: whether or not to impose 25% tariffs on goods imported from Canada and Mexico and a 10% tariff on goods from China. Trump has also floated a universal tariff on all goods imported into the United States. Trump, speaking to reporters last week, said that he was considering tariffs on the U.S.'s neighbors, who are also the country's two largest trading partners, because they are allowing, quote, mass numbers of people to come in and fentanyl to come in, close quote. He suggested they could be implemented by February 1st, though no decision has been made. Budzinski and LaHood said they disagreed with the broad imposition of tariffs, arguing that they should be strategic and limited in scope. Tariffs, as they can be strategically used to support American workers and American manufacturing, I'm open to that conversation, Budzinski said. But I think that if he's going to pursue this, it should be not with a sledgehammer, but with a very precise knife, because we are going to see these countries retaliate. Many experts say that if tariffs are implemented, American consumers will ultimately pay the price, with products like cars, gasoline, food, and electronics likely to see a markup. This comes after an election cycle in which voters, in poll after poll, indicated that the economy, and more specifically, inflation and the cost of living, was their top issue. Trump, during the campaign, promised to bring costs down. To me, tariffs are taxes, LaHood said. They're taxes on my farmers, they're taxes on businesses, they're taxes on my constituents, and I don't think tariffs pay for themselves. But LaHood, who sits on the powerful Tax Writing House and Ways and Means Committee, also acknowledged that tariffs can be a tool to be used when other countries, for instance China, do not abide by the rules. We are anticipating in the next couple of weeks that the president could implement tariffs moving forward, LaHood said. But I have concerns about blanket tariffs. I think tariffs in a strategic way, in a calculated way, can be effective. But blanket tariffs I don't think are good for my farmers or the economy. Both Budzinski and LaHood said they disagreed with Trump's decision to pardon January 6 rioters who engaged in violence. To see that there was no discretion, it was just a complete blanket pardon coming out of the presidency, I think it really rattled a lot of my colleagues, Budzinski said. I don't think we should be pardoning people that have engaged in violence, particularly violence against police officers, violence against civilians, LaHood said. Obviously, as members of Congress, I don't have any say over the pardon power the president has. That's a constitutional power, but I don't think violent offenders should be pardoned. On immigration, Budzinski said she is open to solutions to what she acknowledges is a broken immigration system that former President Joe Biden's administration was too slow to address. She was one of 46 House Democrats last week who voted for the Laken Riley Act, named for a Georgia nursing student who was killed by an undocumented person early last year. Once signed by Trump, the measure would require the detention of undocumented immigrants charged with theft and violent crimes. But Budzinski said that Trump's approach to how he's looking at these mass deportations is deeply disturbing. I think it's okay to prioritize a criminal element because if you're part of a criminal element, you shouldn't be here, period, she said. But I think, again, that separating families looks more like an authoritarian regime than it does a democratic society. Trump and the Republican majority in Congress are reportedly working on a massive all-in-one package that would crack down on immigration and extend his signature 2017 tax cuts, which are due to expire at the end of this year. LaHood, who will have a front-row seat to the effort because of his committee assignment, said this year is going to be the, quote, Super Bowl of tax, unquote, adding that Republicans, quote, cannot allow the cuts to expire. We're not going to get everything that each Republican wants, LaHood said. There's going to have to be compromise, and it's not going to be the perfect bill that some people want. But on the tax portion of it, we're definitely going to have a bill that taxes less, spends less, and regulates less. That will be good for the economy. The Congressional Budget Office has said extending the tax cuts would cost about $4.6 trillion over 10 years. To pay for it, a number of options have been floated, including tariffs and cuts to programs like Medicaid. The 2017 tax cuts, which disproportionately benefited the wealthy, did not receive any legislative support from Democrats, and it appears unlikely their extension would either. Who is going to pay for those tax cuts to corporate America? It's going to be on the backs of working people in central and southern Illinois, Budzinski said, and I am never going to stand for that. However, LaHood said he anticipates that the $10,000 cap on deductions from state and local taxes that was imposed in 2017 will be removed as part of the tax package. This would be a key win for taxpayers in states with high state and local tax rates, such as Illinois, California, and New York. The package would likely be done through a process known as reconciliation, which would allow Republicans to pass it on a party-line vote and avoid institutional barriers put in place on most legislation in the U.S. Senate. But the GOP has extremely narrow majorities in both chambers. LaHood said there is no doubt that one or two Republicans who wake up on the wrong side of the bed can throw a wrench into things. But we have too much at stake, LaHood said. We've worked too hard to have the House and the Senate and the presidency. And so right now, I feel optimistic with the direction we're headed, but it's going to take some hard work and working with the president to get it done. Republicans had issues over the previous 2 years passing legislation in the House on party-line votes, often needing Democratic support to get bills across the finish line. Budzinski believes that will be the case this year, too. The longer they stall and they think they can go it alone, the closer we continue to march toward a government shutdown on March 14th, Budzinski said. They are in the leadership positions. They control every aspect of government. It is up to them now to lead. And I would just say, the sooner they can realize that having us at the table, working collaboratively with us, I believe that is what the majority of the American people want. And I think it's to their own detriment to delay that process, she said. Also on the front page, we have U.S. growth makes rate cuts elusive, by Christopher Ruggeber with the Associated Press. President Donald Trump pledged cheaper prices and lower interest rates, but an economy transformed by the COVID-19 pandemic will make those promises difficult to keep. Economic growth is solid, driven by healthy consumer spending. Budget deficits are huge and could get even larger. Meanwhile, businesses are borrowing more to step up investments in data centers and artificial intelligence, leading to a greater demand for loans that can raise interest rates. If Trump follows through on his promises to impose widespread tariffs on imports and deport millions of immigrants, inflation could worsen, making it less likely the Federal Reserve will cut its key interest rate much this year. All of these trends likely will keep borrowing costs higher, including for homes and cars. Yet, on Thursday, during the World Economic Forum's annual event in Davos, Switzerland, Trump said, "I'll demand that interest rates drop immediately, and likewise, they should be dropping all over the world," though he did not provide further details. The biggest reason for the likely persistence of higher borrowing costs is the surprising resilience of the economy following the upheavals of the pandemic. Trillions of dollars of government financial support from Trump and former President Joe Biden, an inflation spike, and recession fears. Jan Hatzius, chief economist at Goldman Sachs, says the economy is in the sweet spot of heavy growth. It expanded at an annual rate of at least 3% for 4 out of the last 5 quarters, the longest such streak in a decade. Unemployment is at a historically low 4.1%. Inflation, which soared to a four-decade high in 2022 and soured most Americans on the economy, is back down to 2.4%, according to the Fed's preferred measure. Wages, which badly trailed prices in 2021 and 2, rose faster than inflation for the past 18 months, which provides the fuel for growth. A healthier economy spurs more Americans to borrow to buy cars, homes, and large appliances, and businesses to invest in equipment and factories. Such moves are great for the economy, but more demand for loans to fund all that spending can also keep interest rates elevated. And steadier growth could keep prices higher. Companies that see healthy consumer demand may decide they can charge more, as Netflix announced it would do last week after a surge of subscribers. Trump promises to stimulate the economy through tax cuts and deregulation, while promising to impose tariffs and immigration restrictions, which could keep prices elevated. He seeks to foster more production of oil and gas in the U.S. with the goal of reducing energy prices and bringing down broader inflation. That, in turn, would enable the Fed to cut its key interest rate. But that doesn't factor in the reaction of financial markets, which also affects the cost of borrowing for a home or car. Since the Fed began cutting its rate in September, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note, which strongly influences mortgage rates, rose substantially. Genelle Goldberg, head of U.S. rates strategy at TD Securities, says investors are anticipating a continuation of stronger growth, in part fueled by Trump's proposals to cut taxes and reduce regulation. In that scenario, the Fed would be less likely to cut its key rate. Many investors are discounting Trump's tariff threats, hoping he intends to use them as leverage in international talks rather than permanently impose them. Another trend that Trump helped spark is the rise of protectionist measures around the world. That led to multinational corporations scrambling to relocate their production from countries that are the target of Trump's ire, particularly China, to other countries such as Vietnam or Malaysia. Nearly all economists forecast that will push prices higher, though the increase could be modest. Stubbornly high yearly budget deficits threaten to lift interest rates as well, because Wall Street investors may require higher yields to buy all the Treasury securities needed to finance the debt. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office said this year's deficit would likely reach $1.9 trillion and grow to $2.7 trillion in a decade. Trump's proposals to extend his 2017 tax cuts and implement new ones could raise those deficits even further. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 28, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.